Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Wood Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on tax protest when we come back. You know, the income tax and Social Security programs are not compatible with our traditional American values, and that's because these two programs encompass the second and the eighth planks to the Communist Manifesto. That's a foreign and alien ideology. Traditional American values were rooted in individual responsibility in place of Social Security and tithing in place of the income tax. But these foreign and alien ideologies require of us that we violate three of the Ten Commandments and eight statutes of the Old Covenant. And we're taught to covet our neighbor's property, and then we call that income redistribution. We steal from our neighbors with unjust weights and measures, and we call those Federal Reserve notes. And then we practice idolatry by signing contracts with these foreign and alien gods that we call government. And we're not getting away with these crimes either. We're now paying up to 75% of everything that you and I create, produce, and taxes. We live in mortgaged homes owned by savings and loan companies. We drive cars that are owned by GMAC or Ford Motor Finance. The average family of four in this country has a $70,000 consumer debt. We owe a $8 trillion national debt. We are surety for another $44 trillion of unfunded government obligations, and our financial institutions are leveraged out to $60 trillion worldwide. And our Social Security retirement system is a chain letter Ponzi scheme. And we live from paycheck to paycheck, and then we're all taught to call this prosperity. Well, the God of Israel gave us a better way of life than that, and our founding fathers followed that better way in our Constitution at Article 1, Section 10, where they told us that no state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debt. Now, if you'd like to learn more about tax and status and a better way of life, why don't you call and order our four-hour compact disc package. Remember, it's free of charge. The four-hour compact disc package. It's educational, it's entertaining, it's informative. Best of all, it's free of charge. Why don't you call right now? The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, just go to the website. It's georgegordon.org. Click onto the email machine and just send an email request for that free general law CD package. Again, that's georgegordon.org or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about tax and tax protesters. Well, tax protesters are pretty sincere people. Their interest in life is to better America, to better our economics, to rid us of the Federal Reserve and the income tax. You want to keep in mind that the income tax is unconstitutional. Well, it's unconstitutional from the perspective of our founding fathers. They didn't put it into our Constitution. That was a later innovation that came from Woodrow Wilson back in 1913. He was elected, remember, in 1912. Coming right out of the chute in 1913, one of the first acts of the Wilson administration was to enact the Federal Reserve and the 16th Amendment. Now, I don't mean that the income tax is unconstitutional today, but it wasn't a part and parcel with our founding fathers' ideology of limited government, and nor was it their ideology as a methodology for financing the federal government. You see, we used to finance the federal government through imposts and exposts. That is, you tax the goods coming into and going out of the United States. So if the French want to sell wine in the United States, that's fine, but they've got to pay a tax to do that. Well, along with this concept, of course, that we've adopted here, the Federal Reserve and the IRS, of course, and 16th Amendment and income tax that go with it, we've adopted this concept of free trade. And free trade's wonderful for France and China and Japan, but it's not good for America, and it's not good for Americans. And our founding fathers figured that out, held back in 1787. And so they financed our government with these taxes on people who wanted to sell their goods in the United States. And if we followed that practice today and the Japanese wanted to sell Hondas and Toyotas in the United States, that's fine. No problem. You just have to pay a tax because you low-wage slave labor countries can compete more effectively with our higher standard of living. And we don't want to export our jobs and our way of life and our standard of living to China, Japan, and France. That was the philosophy of our founding fathers. When Woodrow Wilson came in with the academics, that is the educated people, you know, people with letters after their names, they said, you know, that's trite. That's old-fashioned. We want a modern worldwide economy with free trade and multinational corporations like General Motors. Now, the other day, General Motors came up with a new scheme. They're going to lay off 30,000 workers. They're going to restructure General Motors Corporation. Delphi is going bankrupt. They're going to scrap the pension program. And General Motors is going to start importing cars made in China to the United States in 2007. That's next year. Now, would someone out there in Radio Land send me an email or a letter and explain to me how that benefits American workers in Detroit or Flint, Michigan? Now, you know, free trade does have its points. Let me run over a couple. Here in America today, 99% of the shoes that we consume, we Americans wear shoes, and 99% of those shoes come from outside of our borders. When I was a boy, 50 years ago, we produced all of our shoes in the United States, except for a few pairs of shoes made in France and Italy, you know, the Gucci people or something like that, some kind of a high-end product, and they paid an import tax to bring it in here and compete with our shoe industry. We employed millions of Americans making shoes. Now, I can remember as a boy, when I went out to buy a pair of Red Wing shoes, it cost me $13, 13 bucks and some change back in 1950. Now, in 1950, I was working for $250 a month in board and room, $6 a day. I had to work 2 days to earn enough money to buy a pair of shoes. The other day, I was in town, and I bought a pair of shoes. They weren't Red Wings, but they were a pair of shoes that were equal to made in Poland. Paid $65 for them at Bass Pro Shop. Now, the median wage in the United States is $16 and some change. So I'm just going to plug in 16 times 8, and that's $128. Let's divide that by the $65, and that's about 2 days, now, or 1.96 days. In other words, I can work 1.96 days or 2 days, and I can buy 4 pairs of shoes. That's because those shoes are made by slave labor over in Poland or Japan or China or Taiwan or somebody else. And, you know, in those days, I had to work two days to buy 1 pair of shoes. Today, I work 1 day and I can get two pairs of shoes. I can get 4 times as much out of this import. And I was watching Frontline, and they were talking about Walmart. And this lady said, "Why, if I could, I would live at Walmart. I do all of my shopping at Walmart." God, I don't find any fault with that. I can understand that lady wanting to shop at Walmart. I can understand that lady wanting to take advantage of Chinese working for $2 an hour and American companies moving their facilities to China to take advantage of that low labor cost, so that they can produce shoes so that you can buy them cheaper. That's a wonderful idea. All right. Now, back in 1950, I was milking cows, producing meat and milk and leather to make those shoes. And other Americans would buy my meat and milk and leather, and I would buy their shoes. And I was making $6 a day, and they were making $6 a day. And we worked together, Americans producing for other Americans. I bought their shoes. They bought my meat, milk, and leather. Today, that same meat, milk, and leather comes from overseas also. 50% of our food now comes from overseas. And 99% of our shoes come from overseas. And somewhere around half of our automobiles come from overseas. Now, I'm not an economist. I'm just an old country boy. But you know, boys and girls, my common sense tells me that if we buy all of our goods from overseas, what are you and I going to do to earn the money to make the products to pay for that? Ah, somebody says, the service economy. You know, that would be wonderful. If we could get the Chinese to buy our services in return for their shoes and big screen TVs and automobiles, that would be great. But these same multinational corporations are outsourcing those service jobs to India. For instance, did you know that H&R Block, you know, the good people that do your income tax every year, they've outsourced, I saw some numbers the other day, I think it's 25% of their work last year was done in India, and ultimately their goal is to outsource all of their tax returns to India. So what they'll do, you'll come into H&R Block with your tax information, they'll take that, and they'll put it on the computer, and then they will transmit that information to India, and Indians will compute your taxes and send the information back. So all you need in America is a clerk, and all of the accountants will be Indians. You know, this concept of free trade is wonderful for India, and I'm happy for them. But I don't think it's happy for accountants and white-collar workers and blue-collar workers in America. The ultimate end of this free trade is going to be barefoot Americans. That's the bottom line. It doesn't come right away, but it comes over time. And that's because our balance of payments deficit with the rest of the world is in excess of $3 trillion and headed to $4 trillion this year. And those people, the Chinese, the Taiwanese, the Koreans, and Japanese, cannot get paid from anything that we do for all of those claim checks called dollars that we've paid them, those pieces of paper. And one of these days, they'll wake up to that fact. And when they do, boys and girls, they're going to quit sending their shoes and big screen TVs for scraps of paper. And they're going to demand something of substance in return. And boy, that's going to be a real sad, wicked day of reckoning for America. Now, our founding fathers, I think, had a pretty good scheme with limited government, no income tax, and financing government through taxing those imports coming into the United States. Evidently, they made a big mistake, and we have fixed their error. Well, okay. Let's see how that works out over the next 4 or 5 years. Now, we've been talking about tax protest. You see, as a result of this free trade, America has become a government of large, huge, humongous government, which requires a lot of taxes to pay for it. And as the taxes go up, 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 more and more people say, screw it, I'm not paying it. And now we're up to about one-third. And that's the one-third that I've aimed the story at this week. Because about one-third of Americans are now tax protesters. That is, they're not paying, filing and paying their taxes. They're not carrying placards. They don't have a particular agenda. They're not necessarily trying to abolish the IRS or the Federal Reserve. They don't really give a rat's rectum about the economy, big government, or anything else. They just want more money to go to Walmart and buy more of those cheap consumer goods so that we can continue on with this orgy. So around that concept, around that ideology, groups have sprung up, like the Pilot Connection. And they came up with ideas like the straw man and the UCC and redemption and Fifth Amendment returns. And that's what I've been describing to you in church schemes and trusts. And the courts have looked at some 2,000 of these kinds of schemes, struck them all down, said it's all BS, and put those people in jail. And, of course, I've been observing this over the last 40 years, and so I'm just here as a reporter to tell you what the results are. And so far, it's the government, 10, and the tax protesters, 0. Not a single one of these tax protest schemes have worked. None. Zero. And if you know of one, let me know, would you? Send me an email, send me a fax, send me a letter. Call me on the phone, say, oh, here's one that really works. Hardly a school goes by that somebody here in class doesn't tell me about some case or somebody out here who's doing this and that and another thing and getting all these wonderful results. And I say, can you identify that one court case? And they'll look at me with a blank stare. You know, I've been doing this now for 21 years. I have yet to have one person cite one court case in support of these wonderful results. And boys and girls, that's because the Congress, the President, and the courts are united behind the tax system. It's the way they get paid. Do you think those Supreme Court justices get paid by Walmart or Target? Boys and girls, they get paid from your tax dollars. Congress gets paid from your tax dollars. Let's wake up and smell the coffee. Now, a guy called me here a couple of years ago from down in Texas. Nice guy. And he had a little plastics company. I think he had 30 or 40 employees. Kind of reminded me of myself. I used to run a little company, produced furniture. And this guy called up, and he talked to me a little bit. He'd heard about me, and maybe heard us on the air or something like that. I don't know. And he said that he had joined up with this outfit and that he had put some ads in the USA Today and the Wall Street Journal concerning employer withholding of employee taxes. And he told me about how wrong that was and how wicked and evil and how illegal and unconstitutional and one thing that it all was. And I listened patiently. And he got through and said, what do you think of that? And I said, well, that's been done before. And the courts have struck it down. And you as an employer, I talked to you about this a couple of days ago, arguing the 13th Amendment is involuntary servitude and withholding is illegal and so on. And the courts came to the conclusion that no, it wasn't. And I told him that. And he was very sad, and he didn't like that, and he didn't call back. And over time, you know, through the grapevine, I heard that this guy had been indicted, and then later he'd been jailed, and then later he'd been prosecuted, and later he was convicted and sent to prison. I think he's in jail right now. Now, he meant well, and I don't fault him for that, but his legal arguments were already tested and had already failed many, many years before. And there just wasn't any point in this guy becoming a martyr and going to prison. Now, I suspect that his wife will divorce him. His children will disown him. He will come out a convicted felon. He will have lost his business and probably a ton of money, and he's going to be a broken man. They all are, from my observation over the years. And I just don't see any real point in it. It doesn't abolish the IRS. This has been going on now, boys and girls, since 1944. The IRS is still there, firmly entrenched, and probably more so than they were 40 years ago or 60 years ago. But people continually try. And I watched the Pilot Connection come, and I watched the Pilot Connection go, and I listened to students tell me about what a wonderful idea this was and about how brilliant these people were and about how they were going to make all these marvelous changes in the tax system and they were going to straighten America out. And all the Pilot Connection did was put a lot of people in prison, and they went to prison themselves. And I'm sure that they meant well. I'm sure that they were sincere people. And now the great thing is straw man and redemption in the UCC. And everybody, I said this 5 years ago when it first came out, and I'll tell you right now today, it's a bunch of BS. All right, now with that said, and now that I've hurt your feelings, you just keep watching redemption, the UCC, and straw man, and watch everybody who participates in it go to prison until the originators of this program, this ideology over here, this tax protest program, go to prison themselves. But that won't be the end of it. That's the crazy part. You'd think that once something has been tried and tested, I pointed this out with Irwin Schiff. Irwin Schiff tested his ideas, and everybody that did it that I know of went to prison right along with Irwin Schiff. He came back and did it a second time, made a few changes, went to prison a second time, came back, did it a third time, went to prison a third time. And now, last time I heard the other day, he's gone to prison or he's in the process of being prosecuted now a fourth time. Now, you'd think that if you sailed a ship at 22 knots into 5,000 square miles of icebergs and you hit an iceberg and the ship sank, you'd learn from that experience and say, gosh, maybe we should steer south or slow down. Maybe we should avoid running into icebergs. You know, ship captains and sailors and maritime people have a lot of respect for icebergs, and they avoid them like AIDS, herpes, and VD. And I notice the same thing with pilots. You know, we discover that when you fly an airplane into a thunderstorm, the thunderstorm tears them up, destroys them, and they crash and kills everybody on board. Airline pilots, pilots in general, avoid thunderstorms like AIDS, herpes, and VD. Tax protesters. The more failures that tax protesters can encounter, the more strident they become about practicing those failed doctrines over and over and over again so that they can perpetuate eternal failure. It's the damnedest thing I've ever observed. I have never seen anything else like it. There's just nothing in economics or politics or religion or any discipline that I've ever observed that has such a self-destruct methodology behind it. The only thing I can compare it to is a moth flying into a light bulb until they finally kill themselves. Tax protesters are like moths flying in to light bulbs. All right, with that said, fraudulent employee withholding allowance certificates. These are called your W-4 forms. You know, supplying an employer with a false or fraudulent employee withholding allowance certificate, the form W-4, is an offense under 26 U.S.C. 7205. When a protester files a false withholding allowance certificate, either claiming an excess number of withholding allowances or claiming to be exempt from taxation, the protester often subsequently fails to file an income tax return. If so, prosecution may be pursued under 26 U.S.C. 7205 for the filing of the fraudulent Form W-4 and 26 U.S.C. 7203 for failing to file a return, both of which are misdemeanors. Now, because prosecution generally should proceed under the most serious, readily provable offense, if the government is able to prove a substantial tax deficiency, charges should be brought under 26 U.S.C. 7201. It's called spies evasion for the felony of attempted evasion of income tax. The filing of the false form W-4 could be used as the affirmative act of attempted evasion. Willfulness in a Section 7205 prosecution may be proven by circumstantial evidence, see United States versus Schiff. The filing of protest returns for the years in issue is evidence of willfulness. And the defendant's prior history of filing proper returns, followed by a failure to file and protest activities, is also circumstantial evidence of willfulness. You know, oftentimes, I know from my own personal experience, I filed tax returns for many, many years. And then I attended the Idaho Patriots Forum. I was invited down, and so I went in and I listened. And the Idaho Patriots were made up of some tax protesters and some people that weren't, but primarily they were tax protesters. Nice people, no complaints about them. They all had underarm deodorant, and they all brushed their teeth and combed their hair, and they were nice, civil people with an agenda. And I remember the first night I went there, this guy was talking about Fifth Amendment returns. And as a businessman, I can remember sitting there listening to this and saying, well, my God, if this is true, how come somebody else hasn't heard about this? How come all of my business associates, you know, guys like Dick Alloway and other people around the business community, Jackson, Thriftway Lumber Company, you know, and Paul Johnson and all the rest of these guys, how come they haven't heard of this? Where's my account? You know, just common sense says to you that if these schemes had any merit, everybody else would be doing it, or there'd be a bunch of other people doing it. You know, the mere fact that this is a fringe activity over here ought to send you a message. A fringe activity. Now, you know, you say, well, a third of the taxpayers are tax protesters. No. They're flying below the radar screen. You know, there's a lot of people out here that aren't filing and paying taxes. I'll tell you a story here about a guy. I was in Rock Springs, Wyoming one time, and I was running my truck and pulled in for fuel and bought a lunch. And so while I was in the restaurant, I was sitting at the counter. And this guy came in, sat down next to me. So I struck up a conversation with him. You know, hi, where are you from? He was from Montana. And he said, well, what do you do? And I said, well, I'm a furniture salesman, and I'm out here, I run a truck, and I sell furniture, and I run a small manufacturing company. He said, oh, very good. And he gave me his card, and I gave him mine, you know, just in case in the future he ever wanted to buy some furniture. I said, what do you do? And he says, I'm a trader. And I said, well, that's kind of interesting. What do you trade? He said, anything and everything. For example, I said, for instance, and he said, well, I just brought a horse trailer down here to Rock Springs, and I traded it to a guy, and I got a truck. And I'm going to take the truck back up to Montana, and I'm going to trade that for a sawmill. One of these little portable sawmills. And I said, well, that's kind of interesting. So you had a horse trailer, and you brought it down here, and you traded it to a guy for a truck, and now you're going to drive the truck back up there and trade it for a sawmill. So what are you going to do with the sawmill? He said, oh, I'm going to trade that for something else. I don't know exactly, but they're pretty popular, and I'll trade that for something. And I said, well, as you're doing all this trading, I said, how do you actually, pay your power bill and the telephone bill and things like that? He said, well, that's called cash conversion. I said, no, cash conversion. Well, how's that work? He said, well, at some point in time, somebody over here doesn't have what I want to trade, or they don't have enough in value. And so they have to pay me. So he says, they have to pay me with cash. So there'll be some partial cash and partial trade, and sometimes they pay in gold, sometimes they pay in silver. And it just happened, this is about 1979 or 80, and gold was about $500 an ounce. And I said, well, what's trading pretty hot and heavy right now? He reached in his pocket. He was wearing one of these big lumberjack kind of coats. But reached in his pocket and pulled out a fistful of Krugerrands. Krugerrands, these 1 ounce gold coins from South Africa. And he put them there on the counter. I don't know how many were there, probably 20. Fistful, handful, set them right there in front of him. He said, these are really trading hot and heavy. Now, I'm a businessman, and I'm running a company. I get a payroll of about $10,000 a week, and I'm paying 30 guys over here to produce furniture. I produce $100,000 a month. I'm out here selling 4 truckloads a month, about $25,000, $30,000 a month. And I couldn't reach in my pocket and pull out a fistful of Krugerrands and put them on the counter. In fact, there was at least $10,000 in gold sitting on the counter, and I remember sitting there looking at that, and I said to myself, my God, I'm one of the straight, tricky dick, silent majority, tax-paying Americans, employing people. I belong to the National Association of Manufacturers, and I'm paying $200,000 a year in taxes to 28 agencies of government that are scattered from Boise to Washington, D.C., and I can't put $10,000 on the counter. Oh, I had a letter of credit in the jockey box of the truck, and I had a pocket full of credit cards and a checkbook, but I didn't have $10,000 in cash. I could call my home. And I said to this guy, I said, well, aren't you afraid that somebody's going to knock you in the head and take that away from you? And we were sitting up at the lunch counter, with these swivel chairs. Well, he swiveled around, he opened his coat, and he said, not at all. Well, he just said, nope. He had a 45 tucked under his armpit. Guy's a trader. How much tax do you think that guy's paying? Now, that's a guy that flies under the radar, and there's millions of people in America that make their living buying, selling, trading, working, doing things in private business. This guy doesn't have a storefront. This guy doesn't have employees. This guy doesn't have a taxpayer identification number. I didn't ask him if he had a social security number. He probably did. I'll guarantee you this, that guy's not filing his tax returns. He's one of those 33 million Americans that flies under the radar, lives his life happily ever after. Half of what he does is probably illegal. Half of what he does is probably legal or has some semblance of legality to it. But unlike the fellow that I told you about earlier, who put an ad in the Wall Street Journal and USA Today and said, I'm not going to withhold from my employees. I'm not going to participate in this program any longer because it's wicked and evil. Okay, so the IRS says, okay, well, let's go down there to Dallas, Texas and get this guy. And they did. They went down there and arrested the guy. The trader from Montana, they don't even know that guy exists. But you get 30 employees out here, and you say, well, I'm not going to make these withholdings. And they're going to be on you like flies on stink. And that's what happens to tax protesters. They've got an agenda. And they're not flying under the radar. Well, they're flying right up here above the radar and challenging the jet fighters to come and get them. And they do. Hang on a second. I'll give you a mid-course reminder here. You're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet. For more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It's open to individuals by prearrangement. And the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact desk. For more information, just go to our homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated every week. It has our radio log, schedule, and archive. And all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health history, economics, news, and current events. And we do that 7 days a week. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. If you'd like one, just call the Law School and Sports, 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that those authors or publications that we endorse or recommend are necessarily going to reciprocate. And that's because most of these authors and publications that we cite on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint is not necessarily endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. So for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Or you can call direct 417-273-4967. We're talking about tax protest and tax protesters. Now, sometimes people say, well, George Gordon, you know, you're a turncoat. You know, you're a government infiltrator and a spy of some kind because you're not a tax protester. Now, the government calls me a tax protester. And then when people come to school here, they say, well, you're some kind of a turncoat. You're not one of us. Well, you're both right. The government's right in that they call me a tax protester. I'm opposed to the income tax. I think it's a regressive tax. I think it was a poor idea. If it would have had any merit, I think that Alexander Hamilton, George Washington, and Benjamin Franklin would have been pushing to incorporate that into our Constitution as a methodology for financing government. They didn't. Income tax was around in 1776. We all knew about income tax. It's actually a takeoff. It's actually a counterfeit of tithing. Tithing is a voluntary taxing system instituted by God at Mount Sinai through Moses. It's a 10% tax for the purposes of operating the government. It finances the civil service called the Levitical priesthood. The Levitical priests were the civil service. Today, we call them civil servants. They fix your potholes and deliver your mail and do those things that government employees do. Under the Mosaic Law, the Levites, the Levitical priesthood, and then the Aaronic priesthood, they had a dual system, just like we do today. They were the judges. If you had a complaint about somebody, you took it in to the Levitical priest. He was a judge, a civil servant. He solved your problem for you at the local level. Then you had an Aaronic priesthood, just like you have federal judges today. You had Aaronic judges, Aaronic priests back in the olden days. And they had to be supported. You know, if you're going to have civilization, if you're going to have government, you got to have a system to finance it. You know, let's just be intelligent people. And so God came up with an income tax. He called it a tithing system. He took 10%. 10% of your increase, not 10% of the gross, not 10% of the net, ran the entire government, local and national. And our founding fathers copied that system. So they didn't follow tithing. They said, well, we'll tax the foreigners. We'll tax the French and the English and other people. When they want to send that British East India Tea Company over here and sell their tea, we'll tax them and make them pay the operating expenses of our national government. Yeah, pretty novel idea. Over time, those multinational corporations that had entrenched themselves, you know, the J.P. Morgans and the Harrimans and so on here in the United States, said, hey, we've got business interests all over the world and we want free trade. And they came out here with the academians, you know, the Woodrow Wilsons, and they sold that to the Americans through the Bank of England. They came over here and said, hey, you Americans need to join the world economy. I don't know why we became the wealthiest, most powerful nation in the world practicing tithing, practicing the law of God, but then, you know, for some reason, it sounded like a good idea at the time, and so we adopted it. Well, here we are 100 years later. What do you think of it? Now, you've got a massive national debt. You've got massive debt throughout your economy. It's you know, this program is probably good for Walmart. It's good for China. But how does that benefit an auto worker in Flint, Michigan? Now, the GM company has moved their entire Buick operation to China. And they're going to make all those Buicks in China and then bring them over to the United States and sell them to you. Unfortunately, as this process continues on, as the auto workers who are making the money building the automobiles in Flint, Michigan lose their jobs, they're not going to have the money to buy those goods. As workers in America go from $16 an hour to $6 an hour, you're going to see a marked deterioration in your standard of living, boys and girls. Can you see that? When your wages go from $16 an hour, where they're at today, that's good because you can go to Walmart with $16 an hour and buy lots of Chinese shoes. But when you're down to $6 an hour, you're not going to be able to buy as many Chinese shoes now, are you? I mean, I think you guys ought to start thinking about this concept of free trade. Now, the big corporations lobby. You know, they pay the lobbyists. The lobbyists go in and bribe your congressmen, and the congressmen pass the laws that these corporations want. And free trade is one of those laws that they want. So they came out and sold it to you laborers out here in your labor unions and said, free trade, free trade. And they dangled this bait in front of you. They said, look, you're getting $16 an hour. And with free trade, you can buy those cheap Chinese shoes.
You don't have to buy these expensive American shoes. You can buy them cheap Chinese shoes. You don't have to buy those expensive Canon towels from American textile producers. You can buy cheap towels from Taiwan. Okay, now that you've done that and you've destroyed your textile industry, destroyed your shoe industry, destroyed your auto industry, those workers are unemployed working at McDonald's and they don't have the money to buy and to support you at $16 an hour. You workers at Delphi. So now what are they going to do? They're going to outsource your jobs at Delphi to China. And then all you Delphi workers are going to be unemployed. God bless free trade. Don't you think? No, I'm not a politician. I didn't come here to rattle your cage and tell you that you need to vote George Bush out of office. But I'm going to tell you that George Bush and the Republicans and Bill Clinton and the Democrats gave you NAFTA and GATT. And they are promoting the interests of the New World Order crowd. And this is the results that you're going to get. I don't think this is good. I think what was a better program is for us to obey God and keep His commandments. When we practiced in this country, this is the United States of America now, and I'm sure to a lesser degree, you Canadians and Australians and New Zealanders and Europeans were in the same boat, but when we practiced more of the law of God, when we practiced more of the statutes and the judgments and the Ten Commandments, we had a higher standard of living, we had more peace and prosperity, and we had a better thing going for us than we do today. And as we degenerate, as we practice more Baal worship, more Mardi Gras. You know, down there on the Gulf Coast, I think you people ought to rethink that Mardi Gras and Christmas. I think that when that Hurricane Katrina was barreling down on you, I'm sure that you people were just praying to Jesus. And did you notice that Jesus didn't do anything for you? And that's the reality of it. Now, I think if you'll take a look in Exodus chapter 12, you're going to find more Passover than you're going to find Mardi Gras. And I think that we would all do better if we practiced more Passover and a lot less Mardi Gras. And I think we'd have a lot less problem with the IRS and the Federal Reserve and the government agencies if we would practice more tithing and less income tax. If we would practice more strict liability and less limited liability. That is, if we would practice more individual responsibility and less insurance, I think we'd all do better. I know I tested it and it worked better for me. And as I look at these cases and I look at these examples time after time, let's take a look at spies evasion. Remember that word came up here in the last paragraph? Spies evasion. Tax protesters don't like the tax. They don't like what's going on, so they want to make some meaningful changes. So they want to protest the tax. If you want to protest the practices from the IRS and the Federal Reserve, why don't you really stick it in their eye? I mean, if you really want to stick it in the eye of government, why don't you practice the Ten Commandments? God, they hate it. They've banned it from your public schools, you know. I mean, you haven't got anybody over here that's sticking up for or that teaches the Ten Commandments. Hell, even your preachers in church haven't got a good word for the Ten Commandments. And as evidenced by the fact that you're all going to church on Sunday and you won't practice the Sabbath. And hell, even if you practice the Sabbath on Sunday, which we used to do in this country until the blue laws were repealed back in the early 50s, and you don't practice the seven elements or the seven indici for keeping the Sabbath. You know, it's against the law to work on the Sabbath day. It's against the law to buy, sell, trade, and do business on the Sabbath day. I can remember as a kid, on Sunday, the world shut down Saturday night. You couldn't buy a gallon of gas on Sunday. If you didn't have gas in your car, you weren't going to church. You weren't going to go down here to TCBY and buy an ice cream cone. Not on Sunday. Not on the Sabbath. Now today, Walmart is open 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. Hell, they run Walmart stores today like they run a gambling casino in Las Vegas. 24/7, 365 days a year. And then I was watching the other day, this Hurricane Katrina, you know, gone through, and this news guy, he was asking this woman, he said, do you think this is going to interfere with Mardi Gras? And she said, horse feathers, there will be Mardi Gras. I saw the other day the mayor of New Orleans, he said, by God, we're going to have Mardi Gras. I don't think you people down in New Orleans are able to connect the dots. Mardi Gras is your problem. Mardi Gras is the reason you got Hurricane Katrina. Time to wake up and smell the coffee, boys and girls. The God of Mardi Gras couldn't protect you from Hurricane Katrina. Did it ever occur to you that maybe the God of Abraham stuck it in your eyeball for practicing Mardi Gras? Christmas, Easter, New Year's? I think you'd do better to practice the Sabbath and the Passover and the Days of Unleavened Bread and Feast of Tabernacles and so on. Some guy's going to call me now, he's going to send me a letter and say, well, that's Jewish. Okay. So, hell, maybe the Jews got something going for them. Maybe we could learn something from them. I'm just pointing out, you ain't going to find Mardi Gras in the Bible, but you can find Passover there 135 times. That's why I said 135 times for Passover and zero for Mardi Gras tells me that God has a hell of a lot more interest in Passover than he does Mardi Gras. All right, let's take a look at spies evasion. You know, an essential element of the crime of attempted evasion of income tax is to attempt. You know, it's an attempt in any manner to evade or defeat the tax. So the Supreme Court said in Spies versus United States that Section 7201 requires a willful commission rather than a mere willful omission. So, something for you to keep in mind there. If you omit to do something, that's not evasion. But if you commit, that is. Thus, to be subject to prosecution for attempted evasion of income tax, an individual must commit an affirmative act in an attempt to evade taxes. This affirmative act may be any conduct, the likely effect of which would be to mislead or to conceal. In traditional tax prosecutions, the affirmative act element is usually established through the filing of a false or fraudulent income tax return. Protester prosecutions, however, are generally so-called spies evasion cases because protesters usually do not file tax returns. Willfully failing to file a return, coupled with an affirmative act of evasion, the likely effect of which would be to mislead or conceal, establishes a spies evasion case. So the government will have to prove that the defendant committed some affirmative act of evasion other than the filing of a false return. So the affirmative acts common to protester prosecutions include the filing of false forms W-4, the filing of protest documents deemed not to be valid returns or deemed to be valid but false returns, the transfer of assets to spouses, relatives, or third parties to conceal ownership of such assets from the Internal Revenue Service, and substantial dealings in cash as a means of concealment. You know, one of the things that that I'm struck by is that tax protesters don't fly below the radar. They fly right into it. I mean, they're out in front of the federal building with tax protestation banners and placards and advertisements in the Wall Street Journal, and they're political activists is what they are. They're professional martyrs. Professional martyrs. And of course, I'm not opposed to that. If you want to martyr yourself and go to prison, well, that's fine. You know, everybody to each his own. Different strokes for different folks. So that's the way life is. But I don't see any real purpose behind it. It doesn't accomplish the goal. The goal, remember, was to abolish the IRS. The goal was to alert Americans to the evils of the Federal Reserve and paper money. Now, the God Almighty alerted us to the evils of paper money in Leviticus 19, verses 35 and 36. He said, don't have unjust weights and balances. Let me read it to you. I'll just pull it out here for you and give you an idea. And I think if we would practice this, I know it's worked pretty well for me, so I thought I'd share it with you. Leviticus 19, verses 35 and 36. God himself said, listen to this. He says, you shall do no unrighteousness in judgment, in meat yard, in weight, or in measure. Just balances, just weights, a just ephah, and a just hin shall you have. I am the Eternal, your God, which brought you out of the land of Egypt. And so your government comes along and they say, look, we don't want just weights and balances. We want Federal Reserve notes so that we can inflate these Federal Reserve notes and steal from you suckers. And you know, every time the Federal Reserve prints more money, they're stealing from you. And every time you use a Federal Reserve note, you're passing that theft on to the next guy. And that's why our founding fathers in 1792 gave us the Coinage Act of 1792 and gave us gold and silver coin. They recognized the evils of paper money. That's why they put into our federal constitution, at Article 1, Section 10, no state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debt. They wanted to stick it in the eye of the bankers, of the politicians, of the kings that wanted to steal from us from unjust weights and balances. Over in Deuteronomy 25, there's another statute over here. Let me read this one to you. Deuteronomy 25, verses 13 through 16, says essentially the same thing, but a little different wording. 25:13, he says, you shall not have in your bag diverse weights, a great and a small. You shall not have in your house diverse measures, a great and a small. But you shall have a perfect and a just weight, a perfect and a just measure shall you have, that your days may be lengthened in the land that the Eternal your God gives you. And he says, for all that do such things and all that do unrighteously are an abomination unto the Eternal your God. This practice of Federal Reserve notes, mortgages, interest, of credit cards, checking accounts, banking, stocks, bonds, are an abomination. They're a stench. They're a stink in the nose of the God of Abraham. Now, here in America, and it's also true in Canada and Australia, I can't speak for you New Zealanders because I don't think you're making gold and silver coin in New Zealand. I don't know what coin you use there, but you Australians, you've got gold and silver coin down there. And you Canadians, you have gold and silver coin. And we Americans have gold and silver coin. If you tax protesters out there really want to stick it in the eye of your government, why don't you use gold and silver coin and stop supporting, stop participating in these criminal activities of the income tax, Social Security, stocks and bonds, and the income tax and the IRS? Why don't you try something wild and new? Practice using gold and silver coin. Now, if you want to learn how to do just that, we teach a business school. We teach two schools here, actually, that go hand in glove. One is called Tax and Status. You need to understand this income tax. And I got a letter here the other day. A guy wrote me a letter. He said, I really like listening to your radio programs, Mr. Gordon. I learned so much. I don't have time to come to your school, so I'll just listen to your radio programs. Well, that's good thinking on his part. I guess he doesn't want to spend the money on going to school. But you're not going to learn enough listening to the radio. I'm not covering my business school on the radio. I'm not covering my tax and status school on the radio. On the radio, I'm telling you what the problem is and what the causes of these problems are. And what it is you need to do. You need to educate yourself. I'll agree with you there, but you're not going to get the education over the air. I mean, you know, there's something you need to know. And if you're not willing to put forth the effort to learn, well, then you're not going to find out. In which case, you need to sit down, shut up, fold your hands, and pay your damn taxes. Well, it's either that or you're going to go to jail and take your house and everything you got. You know, it's a choice that you have to make. Don't let me get in the way of your happiness and success. Now, if you want to learn how to practice the Mosaic Law as it relates to gold and silver coin. The same kind of law that our Constitution provides for. The same law that you find in Title 31 of the U.S. Code concerning gold and silver coin. You know, people that practice gold and silver don't pay income tax. We don't deal in income. Stop having income. It's a criminal activity. Stop participating in Social Security. It's a criminal activity. And you'll make more money, and you'll live longer, and you'll have a happier, more prosperous life if you practice thou shalt not steal and deal in just weights and balances. Now, you know, Americans came along and they said, well, we don't believe that. We think that we'll be happier and more prosperous if we practice Social Security, income tax, and paper money with credit cards and practice usury and interest on the mortgage on our house. Okay. Now you've done that for the last 100 years. How'd it work out? If you're happy with it, stick with it. If you're unhappy with it, then why don't you figure out some way to come up with a new program. Tax protest isn't the program that's going to solve your problem. But the Ten Commandments, and particularly thou shalt not steal, and in particular the two statutes on just weights and balances will. Now that's the bottom line. All right, I'm about out of time. I'm going to have to leave it right about here. And we'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, with a new program, new topic, now that we have exhausted tax protest. You want to keep in mind that you've been listening to The Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events 7 days a week. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, just go to our homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives. It can be accessed through the website. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. All right, time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. God willing, of course. So thanks for listening, and good night, friends.